That was really a very hard decision. Really, it came down to several criteria. Is the building a wonderful building in and of itself, or is it perhaps a more ordinary building that's really illustrative of other buildings like it? For instance, an Italianate house built in the 1870s. We would pick a house that would be typical, where we could really talk about that whole building type. So there are lots and lots of buildings like that in the book, so that you walk down another street and you see a building just like it, and you know about it because of what you've read about the other building. And since it is organized as a guidebook, that made it a little easier, too, in terms of grouping things. And then when it came to this current edition, again, it was very hard because there has been so much new architecture in Chicago that's really exciting that was built over the past decade. So the same criteria applied. Was it either a spectacular building on its own, like the Aqua Building that's on the cover that really is unlike any of the other buildings, or in some cases, is it a building that tells you about other such things? For instance, a lot of schools were built, and so we picked a few prototype schools that were really good examples.
Would you talk about the Aqua Building on the cover? It's such a striking thing. You wonder if that is going to be a trend or just an individual statement that will stand on its own as kind of an icon.
I think it will stand on its own as an icon because you couldn't really copy that building without it looking like it was a direct copy or a knockoff. And the interesting thing about that architect, Jeannie Gang, is that her buildings all are so different from one another. There are quite a few of her buildings in the book, and the range of scale is also quite amazing because Aqua is an 82-story building. It's huge, but some of her other things in the book are quite small. There's a pavilion in Lincoln Park. That's really the other thing that people can see easily because it's in a park and there are always people there. But it's a very simple structure. It's a big arch that you can walk under that's a shelter. It's really just a pavilion. In both cases, they both look unlike anything else you've seen because she's really using the potential of that particular material. With Aqua, she's using the fluidity of concrete to make those wavy
rivulets.
Right. And in the Lincoln Park Pavilion, she's using the bendability of wood. She actually talked to boat makers who know how to bend wood into
steam,
curves.
Steam bend.
Right, yeah. Right. So I think all of her projects really are unique.
We think of classic Chicago architecture and the development of the skyscraper and the modernist movement, high-rise buildings. In the last 10 years, what have we seen to build on that tradition or to depart from it?
Well, I think structure and materials are still very, very important following in the Chicago school tradition. You see people like Jeannie Gang and also Helmut Jahn who are so interested in really pushing the envelope of the technology of building materials. Helmut Jahn has always been interested in glass and metal, and some of the things that he's done recently have really advanced that. For instance, at the University of Chicago, the Mansueto Library, most of it is invisible. There's a book retrieval system that goes for several stories underground, but then it's capped by this beautiful glass dome that creates a wonderful reading room for the students. And he's done a couple of power plants there that have clear glass walls so that particularly at night you look in and you see all this machinery that's operating. So, I mean, glass has gotten a lot stronger and clearer. I mean, if you think of the 1970s, everyone thing had that dark, smoky glass for energy reasons, and now they're able to make very clear glass that still blocks a lot of the sun's heat. And so people like Helmut Jahn are really taking full advantage of that.
We think of the Chicago school as setting the trend for the rest of the world, and that's perhaps an overly simplistic interpretation because, you know, architects borrow and observe and learn from examples everywhere. How has today's architectural scene affected what's gone on in the last decade?
Well, everything is more global now. And especially if you think of Chicago, architects are working, they've always worked all over the country, but they're really working all over the world now. I mean, so many buildings in China and in the Middle East have been done by Chicago architects. Trump Tower here was done by Adrian Smith, when he was with SOM, but they've done Burj Dubai, Burj Khalifa. So they've done these very tall buildings all over the world. So the their style and technology has really gone global. It really is, again, a new international style, just as we talked about the international style back in the 1930s and 50s.
In most discussions of architecture, we think of the striving of society and the prosperity of any given period, but you also pay some attention to slums and poverty in this book. Why did you choose to do that?
It's all part of really representing the entire built environment of Chicago, and housing of all types are really part of the city. Most of the high-rises are gone, but there are other areas that are taking their place, and it's a housing story and it's a planning story. And the book really covers a lot of urban planning and how do these decisions get made? You know, why was there this long corridor of high-rise public housing along the Dan Ryan?
Why?
Well, that was the historic settlement area for the Great Migration of African Americans from the South, and how restrictive housing covenants really kept them into a very restricted area on the south side. And Bridgeport, of course, was just to the west, and that's where a lot of the Chicago political power was based.
And how does that still echo in today's architecture?
Well, you don't see the high-rises anymore. One way in which it's been felt is that the population of the city has really gone down, and the closing of the schools, the closing of 49 elementary schools that Mayor Emanuel did was in part a reflection of the depopulation of the city when the high-rises, or of parts of the city, when the high-rises were torn down. The area is being redeveloped, but very slowly because, of course, unfortunately, the destruction of the high-rises also coincided with the mortgage crisis and the slump in building. So that all the grand plans that they had for rebuilding mixed-income communities in place of these high-rises got really stalled by the recession. Now, it's been moving forward in the Cabrini-Green neighborhood because that neighborhood is geographically so desirable in terms of its proximity to the Loop, to River North, to Old Town, Gold Coast, Lincoln Park.
Over the life of this book, who has its audience substantially been? Is it people in Chicago who want to know more? Is it tourists? Is it people like me who've lived all their lives in Illinois but are not from Chicago? Who gets the biggest bang for the buck here?
I think it appeals to a wide range of people. I think the people who probably use it most often are people who live in Chicago and want to consult it to discover a new neighborhood. But there's so much about Chicago architecture that applies to other cities, and particularly the Midwest. I was just thinking today about Louis Sullivan, the ornament that he devised. There are Sullivan-esque ornamental features to buildings really throughout the Midwest, in addition to the ones that he designed, but even small commercial buildings that you see throughout the Midwest have ornament that was influenced by Louis Sullivan. And so I think in reading the book, anyone comes away with a really rich understanding of their own city and its development and of architecture in general.
There is a divergence in any period between public architecture and utilitarian commercial architecture, which needs to be more accountable to cost and commercial pressures. How is that reflected in the last decade? You know, you think of the public building as the apex of what a society has to offer. It's awfully richly ornamented and representing a statement of what society aspires to be, and there are fewer ornaments and flourishes. I'm thinking primarily of the 1930s or even the late 1800s when these public buildings were also public works projects.
Right. I think so many public buildings now, especially in Chicago and Illinois, really have very constrained budgets too. I think it's university buildings and buildings by private foundations, like the Poetry Foundation, where we've seen some very exciting architecture. And I don't want to say they don't have cost constraints, because they all very definitely do, and especially in the, you know, in the economic environment we've been in the past several years.
But their purpose allows them to make aesthetic choices and design choices that, that are not entirely economical.
Right, and I'm thinking of the Logan Arts Center down at University of Chicago, which has become a real landmark on that campus. It's covered with absolutely beautiful limestone and has levels of finishes inside and out that are really quite special. I'm also thinking of the Poetry Foundation, designed by John Ronan in River North, that has a very serene beauty to it that comes from the materials, which again aren't necessarily lavish materials, but they, as with all of John Ronan's buildings, they are used judiciously and very appropriately. But I think some of the spectacular things he's done have been under real constraints. For instance, what really put him on the map was the Gary Comer Youth Center down in the Grand Crossing neighborhood, which again is a very economically challenged neighborhood, and he couldn't use a lot of glass there. He needed the building to be feel more protected, and so he used these different colors of fiber cement panels to make it a very lively and engaging building, but with a real sense of security to it also.
Lori McGovern-Peterson is the co-editor of the American Institute of Architects Guide to Chicago, the latest edition from the U of I Press. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.